So.
And you want to have an introduction on recording.
Okay, so Mark Goodner is the program attorney and deputy counsel for Texas Municipal Courts Education Center. Prior to this job, he worked in civil litigation in Austin. Graduated from the University of Texas School of Law with Juris Doctorate and certification in Graduate Portfolio Program in Dispute Resolution in May of 2007. While in law school, he worked in the mediation clinic, was a finalist in the Thad T. Hutchison Moot Court Competition, and served on the executive board of Assault and Flattery. Let me just say that Mark is now Judge Goodner as well. He is serving a small community down around the Austin area. A new appointment is what I understand, and kind of getting his feet wet in that. But he is also one of the most informative presenters that I think I have had the pleasure of knowing these past few years with Texas Municipal Courts Education Center. So I hope that you will join me in welcoming Mark Goodner.
Thank you. Okay, well, let me tell you a little bit about the history of this class. So this is juveniles after the judgment. So we're going to try and focus on everything after you see them, make that initial appearance, after the judgment, after everything, all those things that we still have to worry about with kids. I gave you a new handout because there are some big changes going on right now in the legislative session, and I wanted that to be reflected in your materials. So there are some updates. Now, I saw before I came that we had... I saw we had about 47 people total for clerks, and I figured 25 in a triple breakout will be plenty, so I have 25 new handouts, and I think we have like 26 or 27 people. So I might be short. If you didn't get a handout, I apologize. Email me. I'll send it to you. Somebody can take my – well, no, I don't want to say that because I might have to teach with that again with my notes on it. But I've got some new things in there. Now, this class has traditionally this year been either an hour or 50 minutes long. And it's always been a real stretch to get it in 50 minutes, which is what we have today. And in fact, last week I talked to court administrators for an hour and 15 minutes and went the whole time. So I'll tell you right now, there's probably some things we will skip over for the sake of time. I know that you've got another alcohol offenses class in the program, so we won't spend much time there. But there's some things that I think you really want to hear, brand new stuff, which if you don't come to the legislative update, you might miss. But first, before we get into juveniles, so I have this picture here. I also have this new program that we're using called, called MindJet, Mind Mapping. So it kind of gives us a graphical picture of how things relate together, and then it'll pop up little PowerPoints. But a little bit about my background with juveniles. I did teach school for 5 years, so I'm in public schools in Texas, so I'm used to dealing with juveniles, but my day-to-day experience comes from my 14-year-old daughter, who's getting ready to start high school, so keep me in your prayers. I have a 4.5-year-old son and a 22-month-old son. So that's where my juveniles, my 4-year-old looks a lot like that most of the time. So before we get into the meat of it, let's just define the terms real quick. Juveniles is a real general term. So we need to be clear as to exactly what we're talking about here. It opens. Okay. So a juvenile, what is a juvenile when you think you've got the answer right in front of you, but what do you think of when somebody says, do you all see juveniles? What kind of people are we talking about? 16, under 17, 10 through 16, right. So generally, it's a general term, and it includes children and minors. So we're concerned about both of those things. They are used in different codes to specify the certain age groups, but they don't always mean the same thing. So we have to look all over to get the answers. I put together this little chart, which I think should be helpful. In the family code, when we see child, which we're directed there a lot for the definition of child, that means age 10 or older and under 17. A code of criminal procedure, which tells us who we can handle. So when we're talking about processing kids and having jurisdiction of them, we're still concerned with at least 10 and under 17, but they're not considered a child technically unless they're charged with or convicted of an offense. Under the transportation code, a minor is under 17. Under the alcoholic beverage code, a minor is under 21. Of course, we know you have to be 21 to drink. Health and safety code, we're concerned about smoking. So what's the age of majority there? 18. So under 18 would be minor. And then education code, compulsory school attendance, the people that have to go to school. Here's the general rule, at least 6, or who is younger than 6, and they're enrolled in first grade, or they've not yet reached their 18th birthday. So that's the general rule, although even if they're 18, if they're in the middle of the school year, they have to complete that. So that's that. The second term, judgment, just to be really clear, a judgment is one of those magical pieces of paper, like the title to your house or your car, that you may not think means a lot everyday sense, but it means a lot in that it has some weight behind it. So the law behind it is 45041 of the Code of Criminal Procedure, and a judgment and sentence in our court, since we don't sentence people other than assessing a fine, judgment and sentence is the fine and costs. Judgment should also include the manner of payment. That's either pay me right now, pay me at a later date, or over time. Restitution, if there's a victim, the judge can add restitution in the judgment. Or we have this expansion port, which really becomes important when you're talking about kids, because the judges can put all these other orders into the judgment that the juveniles have to comply with. So we'll talk a little bit about that. And there might be jail credit specified how that's calculated in the judgment. And that needs to be rendered in open court, as all of these are public matters, even proceedings dealing with juveniles, although the records change things a little bit later. So the first thing, and if you'll be able to compare what I used to have, non-disclosure, which we talked to you all about every school last year, multiple times, really hit it hard and pointed out a lot of the problems. Thankfully, some of those have been addressed in this legislative session, so I'll tell you about what those changes are going to be. So let's look at this real quick. Okay, so non-disclosure orders became important June 19, 2009, because that said any time we convicted a child of a crime that's a fine-only misdemeanor, which is exactly what we see and what we do, we had to enter immediately this order of non-disclosure. So that, and a lot of you had to deal with that headache for the last 2 years now, figuring out how that should be done, how to deal with requests for information on all of that. Well, the Juvenile Justice Code purposes, if we think about why we see kids and why what our role is with them, we have greater concerns than merely just punishing them. So if you ask people on the street and said, what's the reason for having a criminal court in Texas? What's the purpose of a criminal court for adults? Most people would say, well, to see the justice is done, to punish people when they break the law, to hold them accountable, so that there's a consequence, things like that. And that's true. All of those things matter. So that's kind of number one, this first purpose, to promote the concept of punishment for criminal acts. But when we see kids, we have all these greater concerns. So, and think about it. If an adult is convicted of speeding, or let's say an adult is convicted of public intoxication, what's the punishment for the adult? Fine and court costs, right? We can hit them in their wallet, and that's the only place we can hit them, in municipal court. Well, if a child is convicted of an alcoholic beverage code offense, or a minor, I should say, what's the punishment for them? Right, so you have fine and court costs, but, so we have that first one, promoting the concept of punishment, but we also have all these other ones, treatment, training, rehabilitation, to provide for the care, protection, and wholesome moral, mental, and physical development. So that's where alcoholic awareness classes come in, community service. It's not just to punish them, but to redirect them and try to get them on the right path. And then the last one, which I think ties to the records of juveniles, to remove, where appropriate, the taint of criminality from children committing certain unlawful acts. So the Juvenile Justice Code has listed as one of its purposes a way to control that label, that taint of criminality that's on them for the long haul. Now, in the past, juvenile records and juvenile courts were confidential, but they were not confidential in any way in municipal court. So they would be labeled, they are criminals, and they would be considered criminals, and it would be available to everyone forever. That changed a little bit in 2009. And there came about this way to control the taint of criminality. There was always a way to make them disappear through expunction, which is wiping everything away so it's gone. But non-disclosure was a new thing, a new attempt to control the taint of criminality. It added 411.081, mandating that we as criminal courts immediately issue a non-disclosure order on conviction of a child for misdemeanor only. Misdemeanor punishable by fine only. Only applies to kids, so we're talking at least 10 under 17. So keep in mind, non-disclosure orders never applied and still do not apply to a minor convicted of an alcohol offense that's an adult. So 17 to 20-year-olds. They have to be a child. And that became effective June 19, 2009. And instead of it being a complete destruction like expunction, it's sweeping it under the rug in some aspects so that people aren't going to know about it unless they're part of this VIP list that can come by and lift up the corner of the rug and see their transgressions. So that was the goal. Those were the goals of order of non-disclosure. Fairly mirror the protection offered in juvenile court, applies on conviction only for fine-only misdemeanors, and it applies only in cases when it's not a CHINS offense, conduct in need of supervision, which is a juvenile law term, and it was confusing that it was ever in the law in the first place, because if it is in municipal court, it is not a CHINS offense. It doesn't become CHINS until it is transferred to the juvenile court. So that was one area of confusion. So when they were convicted, immediately issue that within 15 days, send it to DPS, and then DPS has to disseminate the orders, is how it's supposed to work. So within 15 days, they get the order, and then within 30 days, they're supposed to send it to anybody that might have information. So that could be prosecutors, could be police, could be all the court personnel. Everybody was supposed to get that information. And the court who issued the order would receive a copy of that back. Well, the question I have down here is, how is it working? I will tell you that we have talked to probably at least 4,000 people over the last 2 years about this. And the sad thing is, we have not heard of one instance from any court in the state that has received back a copy of a non-disclosure order from DPS. So the dissemination is not happening. The courts know, because we all know the process and know that it's protected, but we don't know if the police know, we don't know if the prosecutors know, we don't know if the kids are receiving any of the benefits of this non-disclosure. So I put this picture here. Does anybody know what that is a picture of? I was at a concert. My wife's a choir director, and I was listening to this piece of music, and there was some poetry that went with the text of the music called about whirligig beetles, and I'd never heard of whirligig beetles, but apparently they swim. And here's a quote from this poem that I think really kind of describes how the non-disclosure order has worked so far. We're fond of the phrase as the whirligig swims, meaning traveling by the most circular, roundabout, backtracking, indirect, serpentine, tortuous, twisty, and turny best possible route. Okay? So the problem here is, instead of you're in the court, probably the prosecutor is next door, probably the police department is next door, everybody that needs to know is right there. And it would be real easy to say, here's our order of non-disclosure, here's a copy for you, here's a copy for you, we're done. Instead, we're saying, okay, I'm done with this order. Let's mail it to Austin. And then Austin is going to send it back to you next door. And that's when it becomes effective. It didn't make sense. It'd be like if you needed those last couple of eggs to finish your chocolate chip cookies and you decided, I'm just going to run to the corner store in Canada to pick up my eggs and bring them back. So it wasn't working. And here's a great picture that my colleague Ryan found. And they say that pictures are worth 1,000 words. So this is a good explanation of how it's working so far. And I don't even know if this is the case. I mean, distributing all of these non-disclosure orders is not a desirable task in any way. They're getting all of these orders from around the state, and they have to send them out. So are they being lifted, you know, off the ground under the burden of all of these orders? We'd like to think that was the cause, but we still haven't heard of one example, even one coming back. So it might even be more sad. They might be hitting the circular file. I don't know, just going right in the trash. So they weren't working. So last year, Ryan and I wrote a paper on non-disclosure orders and pointed out a lot of the issues, and we made 6 suggestions for how to change it. And these are the 6 suggestions. Streamline it, OK? Okay, make it really easy and quick to implement. Don't worry about involving DPS at all. And was there even a need to sign an order? Not applicable to traffic. There was always a question on whether they applied to traffic convictions because the intent was that it did not apply. But the letter of the law said they absolutely do apply, and DPS like to say, no, they don't, even though they did. So there was confusion there. So we said, if it's not going to apply to traffic, say it doesn't apply to traffic, and it's going to save everybody a lot of time. That was suggestion two. Three, remove the reference to chins. That was just confusing. If it's in our courts, it's not chins anyway. Keep it local. Don't worry about sending it to DPS. And five, we thought was a big issue in talking to all the clerks around the state, allow access to parents. It made no sense to say, if a kid gets in trouble, mom or dad, you have to be here at the appearance, you have to be here at every step through the proceeding, and then as soon as they're convicted, we're going to put up a brick wall and deny you access. We can't take a payment from you and give you any information. All of that was a big problem. And then six, ensure that non-disclosure does not impair courts. So we never wanted to make... the problem with non-disclosure is that if you read it real strictly, it could be problematic in trying to get kids to pay off their fines. Because now there was the concern, well, if we contract with a collection agency and they send out postcards, and there's information on those postcards, is that giving out information that's protected? Is that a violation? So we thought, why don't we make it so that it doesn't apply until they satisfy the fine? So, you know, they're convicted, you owe us $100 or $200 or whatever it is that they owe, and as soon as you satisfy your fine, you're going to have protection of these records. So those are suggestions that we had, and there were a couple of efforts to reshape things. Senate Bill 1752 died. Committee substitute for House Bill 3695 dealt with it and died. But then at the last minute, House Bill 61 was already dealing with some juvenile records issues, and they tagged this on, and it went through. So unless the governor vetoes this, and I can't see why he would, this is going to be law. And not one person voted against it, so it's not going to go into effect June 19th. It will go into effect as soon as it's signed or as soon as that grace period ends. So it'll have some date of effectiveness sometime this summer. But here's what you need to know about House Bill 961. It moves away from non-disclosure orders and into a confidentiality model, really truly mirroring more closely the way that juvenile records are handled in juvenile courts. And it adds Article 44.2811, saying that Class C convictions other than traffic are confidential if they're satisfied. So that allows you to make sure that they take care of their business before they get this confidentiality. And then it also adds this, 450217, where it talks about access. Courts, criminal justice agencies, DPS, child defendant, and parent and guardians are added to that. So I think it's going to work a lot better for you. And because these types of records are just going to be classified as confidential, I don't even think we're exploring all this and seeing how everything's going to relate to one another. I don't even think there's going to need to be an order of disclosure or of non-disclosure because it's automatically. There's going to have to be some way for the court to track once it's satisfied, and maybe there's a memo saying this is now satisfied, so confidentiality applies. But other entities are going to know that they have to treat these as confidential records. So I think it's a big help. So what about non-disclosure under 411.081F1 and J? J was the list of entities that had information. It's completely repealed under 961. It's no longer there. So the question that we are still investigating is, what about all those cases from the last 2 years that have non-disclosure orders on the books now? So those treat those as though they still control for now. Eventually, I think those are also going to be covered by confidentiality, which works a little bit differently. The question is, does it make sense for having these non-disclosure orders that refer you to a law, 411.081F1 and J, that is no longer there? Is it still valid? And that's something we're going to have to look at. But right now, treat non-disclosures as you have done, but it could have happened today or in the coming days. This will go into effect, and then you won't have to do the same process anymore. Okay, so that's the first big change that I wanted you all to be aware of, is the records Alcoholic Beverage Code offenses. You're going to have a whole class on that, so I don't want to spend much time on it. The main thing I want to talk about, I'm going to flip through some things. Penalties, you're probably all aware of. It's in the statute, $500, alcohol awareness, driver's license suspension, community service. DUI penalties a little higher. The thing I think you have to be most concerned with after the judgment with juveniles and alcohol offenses is the alcohol awareness program. So just real quickly, it is required on conviction, and it's also required as a condition of deferred. Okay, so for any of these offenses under Chapter 106 or even public intox, purchase, attempt to purchase, consumption, driving or boating under the influence, possession or misrepresentation of age, and even though the penal code covers public intoxication, it sends us over to Chapter 106 to punish them. So no matter if they're convicted or they're put on deferred, they have to complete that alcohol awareness course. If it's completed, you can reduce the fine to half the amount assessed, or the judge can, the court can. Failure to complete, it's possible to give another 90 days, but there must be an order to DPS to suspend or deny the issuance of the license for up to 6 months or a year. And the class has to be approved by TCADA, the Texas Commission on Alcohol and Drug Abuse. And I would always send the kids to this website to find a class, or you look at it yourself, Offender Ed, you have it there in your book. There are no known approved online classes. Okay, there's not a way for them to do that online. You will get things in the mail all the time that say, we are approved by the state for alcohol awareness class. We are approved through DADAP, which is a different section of the law. That's very confusing and it's misleading. About a year ago, Kathy wrote an article in the Recorder, you should pull that up, about online alcohol awareness courses. The only purpose for those other ones that are online would be if somebody was convicted of something, say, that's outside of the Alcoholic Beverage Code, a child was convicted and the judge under 45057 said, you've been skipping school and I think you're drinking, I want you to go to an alcohol awareness class under 45057. That would satisfy a court-ordered alcohol awareness. It does not satisfy the mandatory alcohol awareness class under Chapter 106. So just be aware of that. And if you have companies that are trying to say, no, we are approved, I can show you the certificate, tell them to call us or tell them you have to be approved by the Texas Commission on Alcohol and Drug Abuse. Are you approved there? As of now, none of them, nothing pulls up as an online course through that database. So be aware of that. Any of those. And I think from what I'm... It's through the state, through this DSHS State Offender Ed. If you're pulling up the alcohol awareness courses, and you should be able to sort by county and city, I've even been told you can go there, and there's... reciprocal locations if they're from out of state. That's the best thing to do. Yeah. You know, it's their job to find the course. Okay. Community service has to be related to alcohol. If it's not available in the community, the judge can say, I'll give you something that I consider appropriate. So there is a substitute. There is no substitute for alcohol awareness class. If it's not available in the area, the judge has no authority under the law to say, well, I know it's an hour drive over to the alcohol awareness course. Why don't you write me a paper? Or why don't you go pick up beer cans or whatever? Tobacco works differently. Under the law, tobacco says if there's not a tobacco class in the county and you're rural, you can have a substitute. There is no language like that about alcohol. There's no substitute for an alcohol awareness course. Driver's license suspension is tagged onto one of the penalties. So I just wanted to touch, main thing about alcohol to be aware of after is that alcohol awareness course. Okay, tobacco cases. Penalties, you start off, first conviction, max fine of $250. But the court suspends the fine and orders tobacco awareness, and if they complete it, then the court dismisses it. It's kind of like a deferred, automatic deferred. They have to get that course. If they complete it, they're dismissed. It's not, they're not convicted, but they still pay the core costs, like on a deferred or a driving safety course. Subsequent offenses, there's a little bit of an enhancement. Still have a max fine of $250. You order tobacco class and there's suspended execution. If they complete it, they're still convicted, but the fine can be reduced to not less than half of what was originally assessed. And if they fail to complete, it can trigger a driver's license suspension of up to 180 days. Tobacco awareness program is required. The court can also require the parent to attend as well. That's a possibility under the statute. On request, it can be given in another language. And here's the part that does not exist for alcohol that gives a little bit of flexibility. If the defendant resides in a rural area of the state or where it's not available, the court shall require 8 to 12 hours of tobacco-related community service. So you have to allow them, if it's hard to get to, an alternative for tobacco. And it even says in the statute, this is remedial, not punishment, no matter how they view it themselves. And not later than the 90th day, they present proof. If they fail to complete it, then the court needs to order DPS to suspend or deny the license, specify the period not to exceed 180 days, and DPS is going to notify the defendant of their suspension. Do you do a show cause hearing? I would always err on the side of doing a show cause hearing. Anytime there's they're supposed to do it, I don't think it's statutorily in this statute, but to me, I would view it like a deferred. If they haven't done it by 90 days, bring them in for a show cause, because it did say that the court can grant a little bit more time. So I would always follow the direction of the judge, but I would always think it would be a good idea to do a show cause hearing. I always want to make sure we have due process. Okay, here's some more very interesting changes to the law. This section in the prior version was just about indigency. And the reason why I brought it up was, right or wrong, what often happens in municipal courts, and we know this, is that, Johnny Teenager is convicted, and they say, the court says, you owe me $250, and Johnny mom or dad is there, and they say, oh, get out my checkbook and write a check and be done with it. Well, that's not always the best deal, because who is the penalty? Who has been convicted, the child or the parent? Yeah, in that way, they're getting the punishment, but in actuality, we're convicting the child. It's their responsibility. You can't really do anything if the parent wants to pay it. I haven't met a court yet that turns back money to pay off fines and court costs, but many judges would clearly say, now, mom and dad, this is not your penalty. This is not your charge. Johnny, this is your conviction. Let's talk, can you pay this? And if they had a job and they could do it, they could. But oftentimes, kids are in school, they don't have a job, and they should be determined to be indigent and be afforded the opportunity to do community service. Well, things changed a little bit with this that I think are very interesting. So let's talk a little bit about how they can discharge fines. Generally, what are the methods available to people that want to discharge their fines and satisfy them? What can they do? Okay, they can pay it. And second one, I heard somebody else say, community service. If they're found to be indigent, they can do community service and pay it off that way. Any other way to discharge a fine or costs?
Jail time.
Oh, jail time, yeah. We can't order them, allow that, but some courts allow, if they put in a motion to lay out the fine, they can satisfy it through jail credit. Anything else? Labor? Oh, waive it. Yeah, can waive it. Okay, so we have payment, community service. That's in the past only been for the indigent. And then waiver upon indigence and hardship. Doesn't happen a lot, but the judge could say, you're indigent, can you do community service? And if they say, no, I'm disabled, or no, I don't have the time to do that because I've got six kids at home and, my job at Sonic keeps me busy all the time, then it's okay it's possible for it to be waived if they're indigent, and doing community service would be an undue hardship. The judge could do that. Probably fairly rare. House Bill 350 is a new bill I want you to be aware of. It's going to change the law. It adds a new method of discharging the fine. It allows kids to discharge their fine just like community service except instead of doing community service, they can discharge it through tutoring. So the idea behind it, when I read the legislative analysis, they said oftentimes both kids and parents have to take time out of their days to make their in-court appearances, leading to missed school time or missed work time. To make sure that they're not at a deficit for missing that school time, we want a way for them to make that up. So they said they can satisfy satisfy their fines through community service. So that's another option that the judge has. It's a possibility. I don't think and they don't have a right to do that. House Bill 1964 adds 45.0492, which we'll talk about here in just a second. It's going to add a new way to discharge fines concerning children. So indigence, normally when we consider indigence, there's not a good definition in the law for us as it applies to us. If you look at the dictionary, we're talking about people that are really poor. Okay, they lack the necessities of life. But in actuality, what it is people that are too poor to pay. They don't have the funds available. The judge determines if they're indigent or not. And that was formerly the prerequisite for doing community service. So it was considered there under 45049 insufficient funds or resources to do community service. And the way that it worked was the defendant had to either fail to pay and then be found to have insufficient resources, or at the front end, the court determined that they don't have enough resources and they allow community service up front. And they can use it to discharge all or part of the fine and court costs that they owe. It has to be for only a governmental entity or nonprofit to provide services to general public that enhances social welfare and general well-being of the community. There should be an agreement to supervise from this organization and report back to the court. Not more than 16 hours generally, and you have to give them at least $50 credit for every 8 hours worked. If they're unable to perform, that's where a waiver comes in. Judge may waive if they find them indigent and it would be an undue hardship to do community service. So, used to be three flavors of community service. We're talking about this new one under four. We know we have community service as a mandatory remedial measure that we talked about under alcohol and tobacco convictions. Status offenses for juveniles, they have to do it. It's not to discharge fines. It's a requirement of the punishment. As a reasonable condition of deferred, can always do that. And then three, as a means for an indigent person to discharge fine and costs. But four is brand new. As a means for a defendant under the age of 17 to discharge assessed fines and costs. So what it does now is that you can skip entirely over the indigency determination for a child. You don't have to look at their finances at all. You can allow them to do community service whether or not they're quote-unquote indigent. Okay, so that's going to be a big difference. Two new ways for kids to discharge fine and costs. Tutoring or community service without a determination of indigence.
Is that the same as a discount?
A discount? No. That's a little bit different. Statutorily, under some things, under like even deferred disposition, alcohol and tobacco, if they do X, Y, and Z, their fine either shall be cut in half or can be reduced up to half. This is completely different. This is, we're talking about the set number that they owe, and that's what they need to pay off, and they're paying it off. So instead of them giving you money out of the pocket, say, I know that I owe you $300, you're going to give me $50 for every 8 hours, so I need to do, you know, 6 8-hour chunks. I need to do 48 hours community service to discharge this. So it's that would be how it works. So 45.0492 is almost exactly like 049, the community service statute. The only difference that I've found, all this is the same. All are part of the fine and costs, specify the number of hours, only for the right group, supervision and reporting, not more than 16 hours. The only thing that's not there is there's no clause about a minimum of $50 per 8 hours worked, which I don't know why they decided to pull that out, and I don't know if it'll be a big deal. There might be some judges where that could be problematic. Well, they say, oh, yeah, I'll give you community service, and how about I give you 50 cents an hour to do that? You know, there's no specification now. There's no floor under this statute. So it'll be interesting to see if there are any problems arise with that. Okay, any questions about methods of discharging fines and costs and the new changes? Okay, juvenile contempt. This would be for those problem kids that don't take care of what they needed to take care of. This is a very important process that we all should be aware of, because not only is it a great enforcement mechanism, but oftentimes it's a requirement before you get to further options like arrest warrants, capious profiles. It used to be that as soon as somebody turned 17, they'd put out birthday party warrants and go arrest them. That's no longer the case. It's not been that way for some time. You have to go through all these juvenile methods first before you go to the adult methods. So if they fail to obey an order of the court under circumstances that would constitute contempt of court, so that could be not paying, not appearing, not doing community service, not satisfying any order of the court, the court may use the juvenile contempt procedure, and this is how it works. They don't do something, and then you have to provide notice of a hearing and conduct a hearing. And then at the hearing, the judge can do one of two things. Number one, refer the child to juvenile court for delinquent conduct. And if they do that, keep in mind that they're only being referred to the juvenile court for that delinquent conduct, for that contemptuous behavior. So if you see Johnny for speeding and he has to pay $200 and he has to take some community course on driving safety that the judge requires, and he doesn't do it, bring him in, judge sends him to juvenile court, the court still has jurisdiction over that speeding charge. He hasn't satisfied that, but he's sending him to juvenile court for the delinquent conduct. That's one option. Option two is retain jurisdiction over everything, and the court can find him in contempt if he doesn't show good cause. And if they do that, can fine him up to $500 and or suspend the driver's license until full compliance. So that goes on forever. If they still owe money and they're found in contempt and their license is suspended and it takes them 10 years to take care of it, their license is suspended for 10 years. Okay, there's no end. Court notifies when they take care of business. So that can be very effective for the right kind of teenager. Now, some teenagers would say, I don't care. I don't have a license or a car anyway. Take away my license. But many teenagers, having that car as a rite of passage and their keys to freedom, and to take that away from them could be effective. So that's how juvenile contempt works. Also, it can be used against somebody who's older than 17 if that case started before they were 17. So that's kind of how it changed. Instead of the birthday warrants now, somebody got in trouble when they were 15 and they haven't taken care of business, now they're 17, you can still use juvenile contempt. The only difference is, if you use juvenile contempt after they're 17, it takes away that option of sending them to juvenile court, because juvenile court has no jurisdiction once they hit 17. So you could hold them in contempt, fine them $500, and suspend their license, but not say this contemptuous behavior rises to the level of delinquent conduct and I'm sending you to juvenile court. That would not be available. Any questions on that? And that's important because before you ever get to capious profines, which we'll talk about here, you would need to look at that. Sure. That's a good question. I have to double check. I think that it's one of those DIC forms. I'd have to look. I always look in my court clerk's procedures and reference guide through TCCA at the grid to what to use. It's DIC 81. That's what I was, DIC 81, I think. DIC 15 is pretty exclusive for the alcohol and tobacco. I think it's DIC 81. It might be in your back tab under charts. You might have the municipal juveniles and minors chart. It might be in there. Are you all familiar with this chart here? The JNA flow chart? You have this in the back with the forms. I just want you to be aware of it. We're talking after the judgment, so there's two prongs here. So this is, you know, a kid gets charged right here. And then this is if they show up. That's what you have to worry about before you get to KPS Profine. If they don't show up, these are all of the steps you have to go through before you get to an arrest. Okay? So I think it's very valuable. We're going to talk just for the next couple minutes about this top prong on KPS Profines. Now it says here, child violates written judgment, you attempt to compel discharge through juvenile contempt. And then once they turn 17, the judge has to give consideration to this KPS Profine criteria before they can issue that. Okay, so KPS Profine, you need to have a written final judgment. They have to violate it. You have to do juvenile contempt first. And then if they turn 17, or you can even use juvenile contempt after they turn 17, if none of that has worked and they owe you money in a way that normally you would use a KPS Profine for an adult, this is what has to happen. The court has to determine, one, that they are at least 17, and then two, the judge has to give consideration to these three criteria. Is the issuance justified? First, they look at sophistication and maturity. It doesn't say exactly what you're deciding there. Are they so sophisticated and mature that this is the only thing that's going to work, or are they so unsophisticated and immature that this is the only way? Look at their criminal record and the history of the individual. The likelihood about getting them to discharge it through other procedures. So if the court looks at all of that and says they've also used juvenile contempt, then you can issue a KPS Profine. If it's not, then it's you're arresting them illegally. So that's important to look at that. Additional orders we talked about in the judgment about that expansion port, any other orders from the court. 45057 gives the judge a little bit of flexibility with adding some additional orders. It says, on a finding by a court that a child committed an offense that the court has jurisdiction of, the court has jurisdiction to enter an order referring the child or parent for child welfare services, requiring the kid to attend a special program in their best interest, or requiring the parent to do any act or refrain from any act that will increase the likelihood of compliance. So pretty broad power there of the judge. You know, I want you, Billy, to attend this class on peer pressure as part of this judgment. And Mom and Dad, I'm going to require you to attend it with them. Or I'm going to require you to get out of work early so you can drive them to that class every time. They can put orders on the kid and the parent there. And then the last section I have here is on expunction. That would be the furthest thing down the road as we talk about after the judgment. Hopefully after the judgment, they pay it or they discharge it. They do everything they need to do. And then years later, they come back and say, you know what, now I want to get this off my record. So there's four expunctions that you need to be aware of that originate in municipal court. The first one is general. That applies to convictions or deferred disposition dismissals of fine-only offenses. And it's fine-only offenses that are not covered by the failure to attend school expunction, alcohol expunction, and tobacco expunction. So if it's got a specific expunction for it, you're never going to use the general one, which kind of leaves you with just penal code offenses and ordinances. So this would be one you might use for a curfew violation, might be one you'd use for theft, things like that. So expunctions. All of these expunctions are available to status offenders, those things that are illegal for kids but aren't illegal for us, when the person has been convicted, and it only applies to Class C fine-only offenses. So the general expunctions, anybody remember these guys? What was their name? Okay. So those of you that are around kids a lot know, if you see one child with a look like that on their face, there might be some trouble. If you see 8 or 10 kids standing around with that look on their face, you might have a long day ahead of you. Okay. Available for a kid who's a child, a person who is a child, under 17, at least 10, they have to wait until they're 17 to get it. They have to. They can get it expunged after a conviction or a deferred or teen court. And they have to be convicted of not more than one offense described by 807A4-5. So if they have been convicted twice of theft, they're out of luck. If they are convicted once of theft and once of failure to attend school and once of minor in possession and once of tobacco offenses, they can still get it. They get one shot under each section. So if you have troublemaker kids and they've been in trouble once, say, listen, if you're going to get in trouble again, I don't want you to get caught drinking again. Try smoking, try stealing, try skipping school. Let's have a diverse criminal portfolio. We have a better chance. Of course, I'm kidding. I don't condone any of that.
Is that just the room municipal court? Could they go to district court and get it all flopped out? Or is that...
Good question. This, what we're talking about today, is just municipal court. District court is completely different, or county court, if they go to that Chapter 55 expunction. Almost all of ours, except for the general one, is only available if they're convicted. Okay? The other expunction under Chapter 55 is almost, it's never available if you're convicted. It's available if they do deferred and things like that. So it works completely differently. So they might, if they couldn't get something expunged in our court, they might be able to go to the district or county court under Chapter 55, and they'd be looking at a more complicated process and a lot more expensive fees. I don't know if they... Yeah. I don't know if a lot of people know about it, and we'll talk about that. It's a limited application for this general one. It doesn't apply to these ones that have their own. Alcoholic beverage code, health and safety code, and failure to attend school. You also have to notify them of this. Mandatory defendant notification. If you are seeing kids, you have to tell them and their parent in open court of their expunction rights and give them a copy. Okay, there's mandatory notification for general expunction. There's mandatory notification for failure to attend school expunction. But there is not mandatory notification for alcohol or tobacco. I don't know why. Legislature decided we want kids to know that if they are thieves, they can get things taken off their record. If they skip school, that's fine. Smoking or drinking, they're on their own. But I think probably the easiest way is to have one expunction notification sheet with everything on it. Then you don't have to worry about, what are we seeing you for? Okay, I don't need to tell you, or I do need to tell you, here's a different form. All four of them on one page and hand it to them. Failure to attend school, that they have to wait till they're 18, don't need a hearing. If they've only been convicted one time of it, they can get it expunged. Not available after deferred. You have to give them notification in court and give them a copy. Alcohol expunction. Once they hit 21, if they've only been convicted once, they can get it expunged. Only on conviction, not after deferred disposition. No mandatory notification. And then tobacco. Tobacco is kind of the weird one of the bunch. It applies only to tobacco offenses. They can get it when they complete a tobacco awareness course, regardless of age, so they don't have to wait till they're 18. They could get in trouble when they're 12 for smoking, take a course, get it expunged, and then get in trouble again when they're 13, take a course, get it expunged. They can make that request over and over. We'll take $30 every time. Not available after deferred disposition. And you don't have to inform them of the right. So it's up to the person to handle this, so they would come in and make a request. A written, sworn motion that needs to be made after the date of majority for the purpose of the offense or code, unless it's tobacco. Requests have to be verified. They have to make an oath that they haven't been convicted of any other offenses under that code than the one they're getting expunged. They pay $30, and then the judge signs the order, and then that order requires that all paperwork tied to that record is expunged. And then the court disseminates the order through the court clerk to everybody that might have any information.
I have a question.
Yes. Most of these say you don't have to have a hearing. You can proceed on their sworn statement. You don't have a. Some courts probably will go in and search to make sure they don't have anything. But I don't think if they swear to it, and that's all that it says, and most several of them say in the statute you don't even have to have a hearing. If they have lied on that to get an expunction, they're going to be in a lot worse trouble than they were before. I mean, then you have filing of a fraudulent document with the court, perjury. You know, other things that are going to be, you know, that might be something you say now. I understand, you're swearing.
Our duty is, I mean, you're sworn and...
I think so, yeah. All right, any questions? Two other bills that I want to make you aware of. Any juvenile case managers in here? Okay, a couple. Two bills just made some changes to juvenile case managers. One, talking about required training and education of juvenile case managers, and the other one talking about supervision. So now the cities have to come up with training requirements that before they become juvenile case managers, and some training requirements that are ongoing, and supervision. In the past, usually they reported to a court clerk or court administrator. Now it anticipates reporting to a judge, the judge that's over that case, or maybe a presiding judge, but those are a couple things to keep in mind. That would be Senate Bill 209 and Senate Bill 61. That's for juvenile case managers, so not necessarily teen court. All right, I think that's it. I squeezed it all in somehow. So yeah, I think you got 10 minutes for your next class. Thank you for your time.